Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 58th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni. You can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd. My co-host today is...
And my name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. Keegan is out today, so he won't be with us. We are early in the morning. I don't think we've ever done a morning show, so I'm missing my Sesame Street and Daniel Tiger right now, so the short shows that I normally watch every morning we're missing. But just want to welcome everyone back to the podcast. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for leaving feedback and just continuing to support the show.
And we would like to thank Sophia, who is this month's Edu All-Star sponsor. Sophia is all about transforming education through a vibrant online community. They've got about 40,000 videos for you to access and use. They have different certifications you can get, like Flip Class, Chromebook, iPad, Virtual Classroom, and it's all completely free. So definitely check out sophia.org. You can find a link on our website, or you can also follow them on Twitter at S-O-P-H-I-A. And as you listen to this week's episode, we want to encourage you to tweet out using the hashtag EduAllStars. We love seeing the conversation and hearing about the things that stick out to you. We are really excited about this week's guest. Our guest this week is Angela Watson, who was a classroom teacher for 11 years and is currently an educational consultant based in New York City and runs the blog thecornerstoneforteachers.com. So thank you, Angela, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I guess the best place to start, like every show, is tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into education.
So it's been interesting when I was listening to some of your other podcasts about how many people got into education as a second career or wasn't something that they thought they were going to do initially. Chris and Cliff. I guess I'm like the stereotypic teacher from birth. That was something that I always knew I wanted to do. Since I was a little girl, and I remember when I was 7 years old, I had a cousin who was getting ready to enter kindergarten. And so I decided I was going to create this book for her to prepare her for kindergarten. So I had this little Polaroid camera, and I went around and took pictures of her doing all the things they would do in kindergarten, pictures of her reading books and going down a slide and eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And then we put the photographs into a book. We made a little book by stapling pages of just regular white paper together, and then we wrote the caption. So, you know, you will, you know, learn to read. You will do this. You will do this. And we read that book over and over to prepare her for starting kindergarten. And, I think back on that now, and I'm like, wow, at age 7, I was teaching, I was writing, I was creating curriculum resources. It's everything that I'm still doing today. So this is just me, and this is what I feel like I was born to do.
So you were in the classroom. What grade levels did you teach, and what subject areas did you teach?
So I've taught pre-K, second, and third.
Okay. And it's a, what do they call that when you teach everything? I don't teach elementary.
Self-contained.
So. Self-contained. There you go. See, that's a secondary teacher talking. I have no idea.
Yeah.
So it was all self-contained then when you taught?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And then when you got out of teaching, so you taught for around 11 years or so, you got out of teaching, did you get directly into consulting, or did you go work for other companies after teaching, or how did that work?
So I was teaching I've taught in Washington, D.C., and I've taught in South Florida. And I was teaching down in South Florida when I met my husband, and he lives in Brooklyn. So when we got married in 2009, it was time for me to make a decision. Someone was going to have to move. And we knew that it wasn't going to be him because there's not a whole lot of work opportunities in Florida. So it was at that point I'm like, well, it's either time to take the leap or to try to start all over in a new school system. And that was in 2009. I had just published my first book, which is The Cornerstone, Classroom Management That Makes Teaching More Effective, Efficient, and Enjoyable. And I had already started to do some PD locally on that. And I had also gotten a part-time job working for BrainPop as their educational content creator. So I was writing lesson plans for them, editing the BrainPop Junior scripts and that sort of thing. And I still do that today on a part-time basis. They're a great company to work for. So I had a little bit of other income coming in, and I'd started to establish myself. And my website had been around since 2003. So at this point, I'd already been sharing ideas online for 5 years, and I'd already kind of established myself as an expert in my niche. So it was then that I knew I needed to take the leap, especially since the schools were not hiring in 2009. They were laying off teachers, mm-hmm. and it was going to be almost impossible to find a job anyway. So So we got married. I quit my teaching job and left behind my pension and all those like really good things that were very scary to do. And I started doing part-time instructional literacy coaching and math coaching in New York. And I loved it. And then from there, I moved into instructional technology coaching. And now I do mostly consulting for myself. I do a little bit of coaching still in the city for some schools that I've already built relationships with. But for the most part, it's independent consulting now.
Now, I know you blog quite often. And you recently wrote a blog post about a big fish and a little fish and the separate ponds of education. And Chris and I both were talking about that, and we really enjoyed reading it. But can you talk a little bit about that article for those who may not have had a chance to read it?
Sure. So, you know, it's interesting. That was actually my first interaction with Chris because after attending ISTE, for those who don't know, ISTE is like the big ed tech conference. It was in Atlanta this year. There were like almost 20,000 people, I think. And afterwards, I was going to a conference in Las Vegas for Teachers Pay Teachers. It's a sellers conference. And I tweeted out afterwards, so I'm assuming I'm the only one who is going to both hashtag SD14 and hashtag TPTVegas14. And Chris was the only person who replied. And he said, oh, no, I'm going to both. He's like, you know, there should be – said something to – what did you say, Chris? Do you remember?
I didn't go to ISTE, but I said something along the lines of – or I think you had mentioned something about there's going to be a totally different set of people there, and I'm like, well, we're all in it for the same reasons, or something along those lines. So,
yeah,
I think that was the exchange. It was like, yeah, we're all in it for the same reasons, but there are it's two totally different pawns. They're absolutely right.
It is, and that's what I love so much about what you guys are doing here. You know, you're pulling from all these different crowds who may not ever have a chance to really meet each other. So the post was about, you know, at ISTE there are certain people who can't walk 10 feet without being stopped, you know, to pose for photos and be interviewed. And if they went to another conference, no one may know them at all. It's possible that, you know, they would be completely unrecognized. And at the same time, there are people in Teachers Pay Teachers who wouldn't know anyone at ISTE. So my question that I've been kind of thinking about and rolling, you know, back and forth in my mind is, you know, why do we have these separate ponds? You know, everyone is a big fish when they're in a certain pond, and then you go to another pond and suddenly you're a little fish. So why, if we're all working towards the same goal, we're all trying to make school a better place for teachers and kids, why isn't there more overlap? And what can we do to welcome new fish and help them find their school? And what can we do to support big fish as they venture out? And are we being open to having new fish come into our pond? And also, are we willing to go out and explore other ponds? So it got really, really great feedback in the comments from other people who had been thinking about the same thing, and it was really exciting to see.
So just keeping with the blog theme, we haven't had, I mean, some people blog, but you've blogged for a long time, and so you kind of have some ins and outs that maybe like a beginning blogger doesn't have. So I kind of want to just get into like those types of things. So what goes into writing a blog post? How much do you research before writing a blog post? Is it just thoughts that come across your head in the shower? What goes into deciding what you put on your blog?
It's a lot of last minute inspiration. Yes, just things that develop out of conversations with people, things that have kind of been on my heart, things that I've seen people discussing on Twitter or discussing on Facebook. About a year ago I started a Facebook group called Encouraging Teachers, and it's a place just for teachers to inspire each other and share their problems and share solutions. And there's 9,000 teachers in there already. I had to close it down because it was becoming so big. But I read that feed very carefully because it shows me what kind of things teachers are struggling with, what kind of resources they need, and I'm like, oh, I have some ideas for that. So I get a lot of inspiration just from talking with teachers and networking with them.
Yeah, now, I know when people start blogging, sometimes they just like, oh, nobody's even reading my blog. It's not even getting any hits or views. When was that moment when you were blogging when you were like, oh, people are listening to what I write now?
Yeah, it's a really surreal moment. And, you know, when I started, it was in 2003. So blogs weren't really a thing. Then there was no such thing as comments, at least not, you know, for the average person like me. You know, there was no social media. There was nothing like that. So for the most part, I was just writing into a void. And the website started because I was active on teacher message forums. That was kind of like the thing to do back then. Pro teachers, A to Z teacher stuff, all those kind of things. So I would type something, you know, people would be asking the same type of questions over and over. I'm like, oh, I have some things I could share that work in my classroom. So I took pictures with this new thing called a digital camera and uploaded it to my website, and then I would share the link in the forums. And that people would respond there. And so I was like, oh, okay, people are saying, oh, this really works for them. They're like, oh, that's so obvious. Why did I never think about it? You know, that's, it's like, it's nothing, I'm not sharing anything earth-shattering here. Just sometimes maybe you need people to kind of help you think about things in a different way. So I had a few of those moments in the message board forums, and then over time, of course, the site evolved, and I added comments and social media and things like that. But in those early days, I was getting emails from people, and that's how I knew that they were reading.
That's cool. So one of the things I tell people that are starting out to blog is it's really not about the other people early on. It's really about you and your own reflections. And then at some point there is that flip. I've been blogging for a long time too, and not on my not on the blog that I do now, but I've had several blogs since the mid-2000s, I guess. And it, for me, it was always started with reflection, and then it was finally like, oh, wait a second. There's actually a bunch of readers out here that care about what I'm saying too. And then, you know, you have to tailor to that. So, yeah, don't get discouraged if people aren't reading your blog up front. It's, you know, you're not going to be on the first page of Google writing about, you know, instructional technology. You know, it's not, it's just not going to happen. So it takes a lot of time. Google takes a lot of time to realize that you're an expert or you're an authority site, and that way they'll boost you up in the search engine rankings and those kinds of things. So, mm-hmm. So we met last or a few weeks ago, I guess, at the Teachers Pay Teachers Conference. We had dinner together and had some conversations. What was one of your biggest or some of your biggest takeaways from that conference?
So what I was really, I don't want to say I was surprised to see, but it's just nothing like when you finally see something in person happen. I've always heard that Teachers Pay Teachers is like a family. And, you know, I really felt that. I really felt, you know, that Teachers Pay Teachers is supposed to be about collaboration, not competition. That's written right into the TPT way, which is like their guidelines. And I really felt that at the conference. And it was so cool to see, you know, all these friendships that people had developed online with other sellers. Because there's a certain type of teacher that will spend their whole evening and all their weekends creating things for their classroom. And that happened long before Teachers Pay Teachers existed. But you might be the only person in your school who's like that. I was always the teacher who was, you know, making centers on the weekends and, you know, looking for new ideas and, you know, creating these elaborate unit lesson plans that no one was going to see except for those 25 kids. But, it, you know, if I spent 100 hours on it, that's what I did, because that's just who I am and that's what I love to do. It's my passion. And so the other Teachers Pay Teachers, the people who sell on there, are those kind of teachers. And sometimes you feel kind of isolated if you talk to other people or your family members are like, why are you working right now? It's 9 o'clock at night. I'm like, but I'm not working. I'm doing what I love. Mm-hmm. And when you get a chance to go to a conference with other people who are that same way and who are creating because that's what they love to do, it's just so empowering, and you really do develop really strong friendships with them. So that was a really cool thing to see at the conference.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the networking part of it was phenomenal. Teachers Pay Teachers as a company was phenomenal, just way more awesome than I ever could have imagined. And,
well, you know,
and just, go ahead, Todd.
Well, you know, we talk quite often about the power of connecting, and the avenue that Chris and I often use is Twitter. But there's so many avenues available, whether it's Pinterest or Twitter or Google Plus or Facebook or Teachers Pay Teachers. And I think that that conference is a great example of a community that's been built of people that have connected with others. And when you go, it's like you're seeing your family again, and you're seeing your friends that you don't ever get to see in person. And it's one of those things that's your people that you connect with, that there may not be anybody else on your campus that's like that. And so I love that there's conferences that exist no matter what platform we choose to connect. And we are able to have those face-to-face conversations as well.
I love that. Exactly.
Yeah, the whole like-minded individuals getting together is just, it was phenomenal. I mean, that's, I never really even thought about it that way, but that's exactly what it is. That's what I do. I stay up till 11 at night creating this amazing resource for my class, and like, there are other people out there doing the exact same thing. I want to talk to those people, because it's not necessarily the person next to me in my my school building, right? And, you know, so it's fun to talk to those other people that are neurotic like me.
Now, Angela, you wrote a book called Awakened: Change Your Mindset to Change Your Teaching. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So Awakened, I wrote that. I started getting the ideas for that in 2004 when I had moved and I was starting at a new school and it was overcrowded. And so they had two teachers sharing one classroom. So it was me and my 27 kids and a co-teacher and her 27 kids in one classroom. And it was in, the teacher and I had both come from inner city teaching backgrounds, and this was a school out in the suburbs. And the first thing that happened when we got there, you know, we were like trying to figure out how in the world are we going to co-teach, how are we going to fit all these kids in this classroom. And all the other, not all the other teachers, some of the other teachers kept coming up to us and saying, oh, these kids here, they're so bad. Oh my gosh, you're just not going to believe the behavior problems here. And, you know, these parents couldn't care less about their kids' education. And she and I looked at each other like, you think these kids present challenges? You think this is a tough environment to teach in? And I realized that, yes, they really did think that. And it really is all about your perspective. It's about your mindset towards it. It's all about what kind of expectations are you creating in your mind? What kind of expectations are you creating for yourself? Are you a perfectionist? Are you expecting too much? What kind of expectations are you creating for your students? Do you expect that your students are all going to be 100% on task and engaged every moment of the day? Because if you do that, you're going to be really frustrated. And when they get off task, you're going to get annoyed with them. You know, you have to have expectations that you have to expect that they're going to act like human beings and you're going to act like a human being. And, you know, that doesn't mean that you don't address problems as they arise, but you can't let yourself get upset about it. You can't let it knock you off your game and out of your flow so that you're not focused on what's important. So that's what I really started focusing on, you know, over like the next couple of years, is really digging into, you know, what is that mindset of an effective teacher? You know, how do you build your tolerance for frustration? How do you change your perception of setbacks so that they feel less stressful? And how do you have a sense of accomplishment in a job that really isn't ever truly done and that you don't always see the immediate rewards for? So that's what Awakened really came out of, and I'm really excited about it. There was we did a Bible study. There's a devotional for it for Christian teachers, and I did a Bible study for that this summer, and then I did a book club, which was open to all teachers and was not based on any kind of biblical content, for Awakened this summer, and we had over 2,000 teachers sign up for either the book club or the Bible study, and it was so exciting to see how their thinking changed just from the beginning of July until yesterday, as you just start thinking about, you know, about your mindset and about these preconceived notions and these standards that you've set for yourself and for the people around you, and how can you respond to these challenges as they arise. So Awakened is something I'm really very passionate about.
What was the medium that you used for your book study to get people to interact with each other? Is it like on Twitter or something, the email, or how did that work?
So I did this in a private WordPress blog.
Okay, cool.
I wanted to be private because I wanted people to be able to open up and be really transparent about their struggles.
Cool.
And they did. So I would post reflection questions for each day. They read a chapter a day, and then we discuss in the comments.
That's awesome.
Now, obviously, as a writer, you're probably a heavy reader as well. So whether that be books or blogs or whatever, what is something that you're reading right now?
So I just finished reading Pernille Rip's book, Passionate Learners, Giving Our Classrooms Back to Our Students. And I can't recommend that book highly enough. I mean, Pernille is amazing, which, you know, I already knew from reading her blog and having some wonderful conversations with her. But I love it. She's talking about things in that book that I think every teacher needs to hear, you know, how to step back from your need for control. You know, we hear a lot about student ownership, but how do you do that? How do you do that when you are by nature a controlling person and you see a child doing something not the way that you would do it? So what do you tell yourself mentally to let that be okay? How do you really give them ownership? And she tackles that in the book. You know, and my favorite chapter was, there was a chapter called How Would You Like Being a Student in Your Own Classroom? And that really hit home because I know there have been a lot of moments that I would not have wanted to be a student in my classroom. So that was, it was very thought-provoking.
So, what is some advice that you would give to a first-year teacher?
I would tell a first-year teacher to really make an effort to surround themselves with inspiring people and ideas. I feel like a lot of times new teachers are told that they have to draw boundaries around their time. You know, you can't let this job consume your life, and I agree with that. You don't want to be upgrading papers at 2 a.m. every single night. But, you know, what about the aspects of your job that you're passionate about? If you keep your professional and your personal life separate, when are you ever going to be inspired? Mm-hmm. So you really have to seek out things that inspire you and people that inspire you. In your school, there might just be one person, and that's okay. You know, spend as much time with that person as possible. Go into that person's room at lunchtime and eat with them and bounce ideas off of them. And seek out people outside of your school. You know, as you said, Todd, you don't have to be on every social media. Pick the one that's comfortable for you. If you like Facebook, then join Facebook groups for teachers. If you like Twitter, there's no shortage of inspiring people on Twitter. Follow the hashtags. You know, even just the EdChat hashtag is enough to connect you with lots of ideas for your classroom and really inspiring, encouraging people. If you like Pinterest, you can find ideas on Pinterest. Personally, I find Pinterest a little bit draining. I find myself starting to compare myself and thinking, oh, I can never do all these great ideas. But there are people who love it. They go on there for a couple minutes a day. They get great new ideas for their classroom they never would have tried otherwise. So, you know, find those things that inspire you. They don't even have to be education related. It could be something spiritual that you do. It could be exercise. It could be, you know, any kind of hobby that you have, but you have to do things. You can't just come home and sit in front of the television every night after work because you're exhausted. You have to really actively look for activities that really fill your mind with things that engage you and inspire you and lift you up and give you the energy to go into that classroom the next day and give your all.
Is that the same advice that you would give for a veteran teacher?
It is. I think it's a lifelong process, and I think maybe it's even more important for veteran teachers because new teachers tend to be pretty fired up, and then, you know, older teachers, you know, we see the same problems over and over, and it's really easy to get jaded and think all students are this way, education is this way, and it's always going to be like that, and there's nothing I can do about it, and that's not true because we are all change agents in our own classroom, and we all have the power to transform education starting in our own classrooms. And if you've lost sight of that, then you have to connect with other people who believe it because it's not going to just happen if you don't think about school at all outside of your work hours. You've got to be around inspiring people.
Right.
So what are three words that you would hope someone would use when? Now we're going to keep it to three words. Some of our past guests have gone on to like sentences and all kinds. No, three words. You can describe why you chose each word, but only three words. That's all you get.
Only three words. Well, yeah, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot actually because I feel like, you know, I'm known for being positive, you know, and writing about positivity and those sorts of things. But I have this, like, snarky, sarcastic side, too, that I also really like. And I've been thinking, like, how exactly does that fit with all these things that I'm teaching? And I realize that the word that I'm really going for is not positive, but is so much as real. I want people to see me as a truth teller, as someone who speaks truth into people's life. And that's what I really want to be known for. And, you know, I would love to also be known, if I can pick two more words, I'll pick encouraging or maybe reflective. But I think real is the most important word.
That's great.
So what is something that you're really passionate about right now?
So I am working on my fourth book right now.
Cool.
And it's going to be called Unshakable, 20 Ways to Enjoy Teaching Every Day No Matter What.
Love it.
And I'm so excited about it. And the premise is this. Passion can't be faked, right? Students know when we're just going through the motions. And so, you know, we tell teachers, you've got to be passionate. But how do you do that? What are the practical steps? How do you maintain your love for teaching? And how do you get the energy you need? So the book is going to be about, you know, how to create, like, bright spots for yourself in the curriculum. There are things that all of us don't enjoy teaching. Mm-hmm. So how do you make those more interesting for yourself? How do you get yourself fired up? How do you incorporate play and humor into the classroom if you're a serious person. I'm pretty serious in the classroom. So that's been a challenge for me, is to learn how to become more playful and how can I find ways of making learning fun that also fit with my personality. And how to develop, you know, a richer personal life and allow that to inform your teaching, how to gain energy from students instead of letting them drain you. So all those kinds of things are going to be in there, and I'm just so excited to get that book into the hands of teachers, because I know it's going to be really transformative.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking some time to spend with us this morning, and Big Bird can wait, so it was awesome. This was much better than watching Thomas the Train or something else. So. How can people connect with you, Angela?
So my website is thecornerstoneforteachers.com. And that's a great place to reach me. On social media, everything is my name. So it's Angela underscore Watson on Twitter. It's Angela underscore Watson on Pinterest. On Facebook, my Facebook page is The Cornerstone for Teachers. So you can find me there as well.
Cool. And ways you can connect with us, you can reach us at EduAllStarsHQ on Twitter. We tweet with the hashtag EduAllStars. Our website is obviously EduAllStars.com. And you can also search out past and, previous episodes on iTunes using the word EduAllStars with no spaces.
And we would like to announce our next couple guests this Sunday, August 3rd. We have Felix Giacomino at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. I think he's going to be at Disney World when he does the interview, so you'll get to see Disney World in the background. And then Tuesday, August 12th, we will be interviewing Jed Deerybury at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, so be sure to check both of those out. We'd also like to thank this week's sponsor, Sophia, for sponsoring Edu All Stars, and all of you for listening and joining in. Thank you so much, Angela, as well, for being a guest this week.
Thanks for having me.